In 2012, Maine began to address a disturbing part of its past and present, the systematic removal of Native American children from their families and tribal communities. Georgina Sapie Richardson was removed from the Passamaquoddy tribe and placed into a white foster home in 1940 when she was an infant.
My baby sister and I sat in a tub of bleach one time, tried to convince each other that we're getting white. And then we knew they would accept us. Where was the state that was supposed... They were supposed to have been our guardians. But where were they?
Well, let's back up. That's a clip from the documentary Dawnland, which tracks the history of the removal of Native children from families back to the assimilationist government boarding schools across the country in the mid-19th to the early 20th century. We see scruffy Native American children on one side of a frame, their counterparts in crisp school uniforms on the other.
We have the children as we find them before we bring them to the government schools. We bring them in, clean them up, and start them on their way to civilization.
Then there was a 1974 Senate hearing on Indian child welfare, where the Sisseton-Wahpeton woman testified that social workers tried to convince her to give her children up for adoption before they were even born.
They always come to me and said that I wasn't a very good mother and everything, and that my children would be better off if they were in a white home or if they were adopted out, and that this home, wherever they were, that would buy them all the stuff that I couldn't give them and give them all the love that I could never give them.
Were they ever able to prove that in court, or did they give anybody a specific example of why you weren't a good mother?
The answer, Senator Averesk, is no. It was never proven in court that she was unfit.
That hearing led to the passing of the Indian Child Welfare Act, a law meant to keep indigenous children, if not within their families, within their tribes. But last month, a federal judge in Texas ruled that law unconstitutional, saying it discriminates against non-natives who want to adopt native children. And anyway, many states weren't even observing it. So Maine decided its native people deserved a hearing. The state formed the Maine Wabanaki Truth and Reconciliation Commission. The film Dawnland follows the commission as it travels the state, hearing the testimony of older and younger people whose native pasts have been whitewashed. Dawnland premieres on PBS stations around the country tonight. It is terrific. And Dawn Neptune Adams, who was moved from the Penobscot Nation into foster care as a child, appears in the film. Dawn, thanks for joining us.
Honored to be here.
You do testify before the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and tell a heartbreaking story of what this did to you to be removed from your family. Can you just, you know, kind of sum up that notion of how you lost your identity?
Well, yes. I was made to feel ashamed of my family, my tribe, my culture. When I was growing up in a foster home, you know, it had far-reaching effects into my life. I have reconnected with my community, but there is still always in the back of my mind that little bit of insecurity, I guess you'd say. I tend to feel like I'm on the outside looking in, and I don't confidently enter a circle like I belong there. I find myself waiting for somebody to invite me.
This is more recent history, and this was so disturbing. What years were you in a foster home?
I entered a foster home in 1978 when I was 4 years old. Yeah. I believe ICWA had just passed.
And ICWA is the Indian Child Welfare Act, the federal law that was passed to prevent Indigenous children from being removed from communities and families for the reasons that happened decades ago, which was an effort to take away their Indianness. And more recently, it might have been characterized as there'd be better places for you to live.
Yeah. The state had a responsibility to put me someplace where I was safe, first of all, and that didn't happen. And they also had a responsibility under ICWA to make sure I was connected to my culture. And they failed miserably on that as well.
And safe because, do I understand that your mother was an alcoholic?
Yes, my biological mother was an alcoholic. I did need to be removed from my home, but I was placed in a foster home where there was a lot of racism and there was abuse.
Did they literally tell you you were not allowed to talk about your Penobscot roots?
Yes.
You've said your mouth was washed out with soap if you spoke the Penobscot language.
We were shamed for speaking of it or asking questions even.
And now, as a result, you talk in the film about going to your first powwow, and how did you feel?
Yeah, that was 1992. I had just graduated from high school. I had in my mind this idea of what Penobscot people would look like, and I made this buckskin outfit, and I wore it, and, you know, I went there, and I did not feel comfortable at all. I was afraid I was going to be laughed at if I went into the circle to dance.
You didn't know how to do it?
No, yeah. I didn't. I didn't have a clue.
So, Don, obviously you were disappointed in ICWA, the federal law. You didn't feel that the social workers did what they should have done, which was kept you with your community and your culture. But now the ICWA law has been struck down by a federal judge. Yes, you didn't feel it was effective, but it's certainly not effective if it doesn't exist.
That's right. The law itself was implemented with the best intentions. My state did not follow ICWA. So the state of Maine had a responsibility to put me someplace where I would remain connected to my culture.
Well, but what do you say to the social workers that we heard in the film who felt, as the judge seemed to do, the judge ruled that the Indian Child Welfare Act was unconstitutional because it was racially discriminatory against non-Native people and that it placed tribal sovereignty over the best interest of children. And we heard from some Maine social workers in the documentary. Many of them felt horrible. Some of them, though, still felt that they did the right thing, almost kind of dismissing this idea that cultural heritage was more important than getting somebody clothed and fed and in a safe place. Let's listen to one of those social workers.
Again, I think it's a resource issue. Two sneakers for the feet, sometimes more important than learning an Indian dance.
You hear the laugh and the throat clearing there. But Dawn, I mean, your social workers might have felt, you know, your mother was incapable. She was an alcoholic. We need to get her into the best place possible, and that's a white family.
Yeah, what we have here is a fundamental difference in worldview. The standards that they're talking about, those are white middle class standards that are being applied to children of a tribe. And now the tribe is the child's family. I want to make that absolutely clear. The other part of that is that Indigenous people are not members of a race. They are citizens of a sovereign nation. You're not taking a child out of a race. You're putting them with people who are part of the dominant culture.
You're putting them with people who are part of another nation.
Exactly.
How did you feel about testifying before this commission, which, you know, at one point in the film, they're kind of called out on their white privilege? And initially, although they seemed very earnest and caring, traveling the state, a lot of Native peoples weren't showing up because they didn't trust it.
Well, I was asked to participate in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission by someone I trusted. I was initially reluctant to participate. I didn't want to bring up things from my past. This was part of my childhood. I wanted it to stay there. And to be quite honest with you, I was scared of opening up this can of worms and having to heal things that I was afraid to deal with. Mm. I had a breakdown 3 years ago, and it was from running from this trauma that I hadn't dealt with. Mm. So this really needed to happen for me.
Well, and it sounds like for others. We heard from a woman who seemed to be in her 70s, Georgina, speaking about how profoundly she was wounded by this. And then the Truth and Reconciliation Commission released its final report in 2015. And this commission, by the way, included the Maine Secretary of State, Maine's governor, very conservative Paul LePage. His Secretary of State defied the governor and decided to be a part of this commission, was very adamant about its conclusion that what had happened to your people, the Wabanaki people in Maine, was cultural genocide. Was there some reward in that conclusion?
Absolutely. A lot of good has come from this. The reason I did decide to testify was so that it might help other people. And I do believe that it will do that.
By the way, Dawn, you have a 9-year-old now, and you've been able to raise that child in your tribal community. What's that been like to watch your child be able to have that?
It's been the most beautiful part of my healing experience, actually. She and I are members of a drum group called Mama Gesso Singers. We take part in ceremony. We have Grandmother Moon ceremony every month. We've even attended language immersion camp up at a healing center called Nabizen, which is just north of our reservation. I feel like I've given her a good sense of connection to our community. But at the same time, I've been learning with her. You know, she began this connection to our community when she was first born. And at 34 years old, I began that, you know, right alongside her.
Dawn Neptune Adams, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And by the way, Wabanaki means People of the Dawn. The documentary Dawnland about Maine's Wabanaki Truth and Reconciliation Commission premieres tonight on PBS stations across the country. It is terrific. And according to NativeNews.net, in 2016, the Lakota People's Project launched a campaign to establish a national Truth and Reconciliation Commission to address the U.S. Indian boarding school era.